Hello and welcome to the Android Developers Backstage podcast.
Like which podcast am I on again? Which one?
It keeps changing on me.
Yeah,
every 10 years. I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
I'm Chet Haas from the Android Developer Relations team, and today we have.
My name is James Swan. I work on the CameraX team.
All right.
And I am Vineet Modi. I am the product manager on Android Camera Platform.
So you are here to talk about CameraX, which just came out at I/O.
So it's CameraX, not CameraX?
It is CameraX.
Okay. Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Okay. Pronunciation should be like a regular part of our show. Okay. So what state is it in now?
So and what is it?
Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. All right. What is CameraX?
So CameraX is a camera support library. It is built on top of Camera 2, which is the framework level API that's been there since Android Lollipop. And the goal for CameraX is to make using the camera API super simple and just have one layer of APIs that works across a broad number of devices.
Okay. So I mentioned this in something we were doing at I/O, but I had experience with Camera 2 back in the day, sometime in like the L or M release, where I was talking to developers who were having a really hard time because the camera would report that it supported a feature, which I guess, you know, probably some query API in Camera 2, and then it didn't. It just like didn't. And is that the kind of stuff that you're making work through CameraX then?
Exactly. And there's a reason for it. I think Camera 2 is extremely powerful, similar to maybe a Formula One engine. But then it may not always work in a Camry or a, in all the different types of cars. Yep. So I think the output that developers can expect across Camera 2 may vary from devices, especially all the low-end devices, all the way to high-end. And so CameraX smoothens all that out.
Okay, so what I heard is you're putting a camera API in a Camry, which, I mean, that works. Okay, now we understand CameraX. All right.
Yes. So there's multiple things there. So you're making a API that where you are abstracting out compatibility, handling across devices, and then you're also making the API simpler. Is that what I understood?
That's correct.
Yeah, I think we were talking to developers when we were trying to lay out the concepts and some of the goals for CameraX, and a couple of themes that we heard were... Camera 2 is really powerful, but it is kind of tricky to use. It'd be great if people could write code once and have it run with the same performance and run correctly on a number of different devices. So those sort of two things led us towards the goals that we have for CameraX. And you know, one way that we're trying to simplify the API is by understanding that for developers, a lot of applications are really trying to do very basic things, but want it to run really robustly. So get a preview on screen, take a picture, or maybe analyze a buffer. And we think we can, if we focus in more on just getting these particular usages correct, we can create a simpler API. It's not as fully featured as Camera 2, but we think we can cover a lot of the developer needs and make the simpler API surface run robustly across more devices.
So if I have an app and I just want a photo, I want the ability, like let's say it's a chat app, and I want to give the user an ability to take a photo to insert into the chat, should I just fire an intent and say, hey, camera, give me an app, or should I use Camera 2? Like which case is simpler?
Camera X.
What did
We're
I say?
We're talking about Camera X here. You said Camera 2.
Oh, sorry. Should I use Camera X?
It's probably a pronunciation problem.
So I can answer your question for all three, intent, Camera 2, or Camera X.
Nice. Okay. All right.
Now, the problems with intent, so intent work really well when you know that the user is going to come back to your application. And intents do not have any type of overlays or effects. You're stuck to whatever the native camera app, you know, which is typically geared towards photography. So say, for example, if you're a banking app and you want to overlay things when you detect a check or you want to have your logo or your things like that, that doesn't work when in the case of an intent.
Oh, yeah, I think you're ahead of me. Because I definitely see that if I'm doing more than take, then I just want a photo, then that'll be my follow-up question. But so initially, if I just want a photo, is there some very simple Camera X API to say, hey, give me a photo and come back?
So it's a little bit more involved than Camera intents.
Okay.
But it's still simple enough. I mean, we've taken down, say to take a picture from several hundred lines of code to just a few lines of code.
A few lines. Okay, so intents are also multiple lines. So, okay, so we're close. All right, so now we're graduating, and now we want to have the banking app thing, right? So I want to show preview embedded within my window. Clearly now I want camera X.
Yes, that's correct.
How hard is that to do?
We're trying to make the AI as simple as possible, but we need to balance both simplicity and flexibility.
Right.
And also understanding that there's a number of different ways to display things in Android.
Yeah.
And not all apps are, some may be using a GL, some are texture view, surface view, all sorts of different ways to support that. But our general goal is over time to be able to really let the developer express the basic flow in a minimal number of lines of code. And so that's kind of the direction we're taking with the API right now. And we're sort of sketching out currently how we can do that, for example, with a texture view. So we're trying to make it really simple to do that with a texture view and understand and see and make sure that that works for real applications. And then we'll expand that over time.
So do you have, by texture view, are you saying that there is a custom view in there? I can sort of pull up like a camera view that I can embed in my layout directly? Or do I have to do my own sort of plumbing with OnDraw or whatever the... Actually, Chet's shaking his head.
No, actually, so I've been playing around with this for the last couple of days just to try
to get a handle on some of these. Oh, let me just ask Chet instead. Hey, how do you use Camera X?
Texture view. It's just a texture view, and then you basically point Camera X at the texture view. It gets the surface from that and starts displaying in that. So it's pretty straightforward.
Okay.
So it's none of the custom rendering stuff. Like, you're creating a layout. It just happens to have a texture view in it. Yep.
Okay.
But you feel free to correct me here.
No, that's correct.
I want to wire up some more stuff on top of that, right? So let's say I want to do face recognition and I want to put like squares around the faces I see or something, right? And so I assume that I can pull the images out of the library.
Yeah, that's right. So in addition to displaying on the screen, we have image analysis, which basically lets you get CPU access to a buffer.
Okay.
Really typical thing is to open a preview, also open image analysis, do whatever analysis your app needs to do, find the corners of a box or find the face, and then display that result on top of the preview.
Cool. So is this different functionality to Camera X, or again, is this a subset of Camera 2, just an easier way of accessing that functionality?
Yeah, Camera 2, you know, the intent originally when the API first came out in the Lollipop timeframe was really giving access to the low-level hardware and all the knobs, if you will, to tweak it as best as possible.
Yep.
And so you could get a buffer out, you know, get the CPU buffer, but it's not as straightforward.
Yep.
And it varies across devices. And so that's what we've done, is as James alluded to earlier, which is abstract away to really focus on what developers want to get done.
Right.
And they don't have to worry about the hardware. So I think the best way to get a easy CPU buffer is through Camera X, Camera 2 will be challenging on their part.
Right. So there was a couple of things I noticed as I was playing around with this. And again, correct me if I'm wrong. When I, especially for a really simple case like Tor was talking about, where I just want to take a picture, the difference I noticed in playing around with Camera 2 versus Camera X is there's a whole lot of lifecycle callbacks that you have to deal with in Camera 2. And basically all of that goes away with Camera X and you get like, you know, a live data and you're done, right? So that's sort of where a lot of the boilerplate that I noticed went away, right?
Oh, so does that mean that Camera X is an Android X library? Like you are integrating with the sort of the modern practices of live data and all these things, you're not supposed to override on, suspend on, or zoom in all those things anymore?
Absolutely.
So oh, yay. That's awesome.
We are tied to the hip with Android X.
Okay.
And we made sure that managing life cycles was a core component of Camera X.
Yay.
That's really, really good.
I mean, that had to be one of the difficulties for people dealing with camera stuff in general. It's like once you open up that window, if you don't pay attention or do all the right stuff, things are going to go bad.
Yeah, I think that was one of the realizations. You're exactly right. Camera 2, the way I think of it is Camera 2 is kind of like an asynchronous API. And instantly, you have to balance that sort of asynchronous behavior of Camera 2 with the asynchronous behavior of the Android lifecycle. It's kind of tricky. And so I think it was really interesting for us to try and basically have this API that now uses lifecycle awareness in Android X. And that's also like a nice opportunity for us to build the support library with kind of some of the newer features or newer kind of programming thinking in mind. So things like, we are looking at things like how could we expose some of the things via live data, use life cycles as well. So, yeah.
And then observation number two is not comparing to camera two, but looking at, like you said, it's not trivial. It's not like one line of code to get the preview that Tor was after. It's a bit more, it's, you know, along the lines of 50 or 75 lines of code or whatever. A lot of that was just in aspect ratio and size of this thing and transformation, right? It was all about like, here is the portal through which I am looking. And like the actual setup of the camera was quite small, but then the geometry of what it is you're trying to take a picture of was sort of most of that preview code. Is that right?
There's still some handling that you need to do to make sure that is displayed in the right way for your application, which is sort of a design consideration, I think. Some applications might want to do one by one. Some applications might want to do like a full screen.
Yeah.
What I think we're trying to provide all the basic data from the camera so that developers can reliably get that result that they want. And I think one of the key things that we try to do is there's often actually a lot of details in just getting the right resolutions from the camera system. Even requesting it on some systems, it might have like corner cases that don't behave differently for different resolutions on different types of devices. So what CameraX is really trying to do is, based on what the API is being requested, try to find, look at that device, understand its capability level, and try and get the surfaces created that's going to successfully create a camera session that's going to successfully start up and shut down correctly. So really all the developer has to worry about is, okay, how do I display this? And not, these are my resolutions. Is it going to work on device A, B, or C?
Right. It reminds me of GL setup, where you have to say, well, this is kind of what I want, and then you sort of iterate through all the possibilities on a particular device to find out what's there. I guess CameraX is actually doing that iteration internally and then returning something that is as close as possible to the thing you requested.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll go through and understand what are the available resolutions.
Yeah.
Even something like picking a resolution can be tricky to make that work on a bunch of different devices, because not all devices support the same resolution.
Yep.
In the end, going through that iteration, a lot of applications will have to create that iteration logic and selection logic. And we're trying to make that piece simpler so that basically you can say, please just give me a buffer about this size, but make sure it works and starts up successfully on all sorts of different devices. And then we'll try and go ahead and do that.
So resolutions are one thing. At least the Pixel camera has a bunch of software features. How many of those are sort of part of the camera library, and how many are part of the camera app? Like, I assume, for example, that night mode might not be something that I get via CameraX, right? But are there any of the other ones, like portrait mode? How much of this can I get?
This is a great tie-in to the second part of the library, which we're calling extensions. So there's the CameraX, which works everywhere all the way back to Android Lollipop, and then the extensions is really meant to provide developers access to the latest and greatest features that are available on some of these native camera apps. So today we have started with night, portrait or bokeh, beauty, as well as HDR. And we've demonstrated even at I/O on some of the devices where developers can get, with just two lines of code, access to manufacturer features that are typically only available on the native camera app.
Is this a combination of query whether that thing is available and then call that thing?
Exactly.
Okay. And how did that work through camera two? I'm curious.
So that is not available in camera two.
Oh, okay. So the extensions is a superset of what was there. And that's because you are under the covers. Is it working through some API to... I'm thinking like a HAL layer. Like, how do you get the information from the device if it's not part of
Camera 2? Yeah, we recently had an episode on Treble, right? And I wonder if the camera you know, API is part of Treble, right? Because, and you're nodding, but since this is an audio podcast, I will translate to yes.
Yes. So we work with the Treble team quite a bit. And the Treble interface is really used between the HAL and the Camera 2. So Camera 2 has a lot of dependencies on that layer. Now, what's happened to answer your question is the functionality that manufacturers have put in, there are two major ways that a manufacturer, say, might do night mode. Some manufacturers might say, I'll put all my algorithms in the native camera app itself. And so I'll get the raw buffers, and then I'll do all the processing in the app, and then spit out an image. Some manufacturers have the capability in the HAL. So they have the algorithm in the HAL layer, and then you know, they talk with their native camera app and give an output based on what the user selects. What we've done with Camera X is we're agnostic. We don't care whether their secret sauce, if you will, is in the app or the HAL. We interface with each vendor's algorithms library, if you will. And that algorithms library, we have an interface, and that's hidden. It's all under the covers. And then when a query is made, is, say, night mode available, we check on that device if it's available. And if so, then we activate that path and provide the output to the user.
Let me see if I understand how this works. So Camera X is a library that's bundled with my app. And if it talks to a specific hardware manufacturer's library, does that mean you're bundling that library too? Like, what is it talking to on, what is the app accessing?
Yes. So in this case, the underlying assumption is that the vendor library is pre-bundled by the manufacturer and shipped out. So in this case, let's say the Samsung S10 yeah. that we demoed at I/O, Samsung will be bundling their vendor library, if you will.
Somewhere on the phone.
On the system image. So the application developer has no APK size impact.
I see. So your library is going, oh, am I on an S10? In that case, let me look at /lib/specialcameralib.so. Ah, let's DL open it. Is that how it works?
Basically.
Interesting.
So you have what, if defs and the Kotlin code then? So you have some condition switch to say, here's the device?
Do you want to speak to how we...
No. So yeah, we tried to think about how do we construct an API around this, because, you know, we're trying to create conformity. Like, we want an API where you write once and it runs on all devices.
Yeah, you probably want support for 10,000 different devices. You don't want 10,000 ifs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but now we also want to support extensions, which are by nature something that is device specific. So how do we still balance the two? What we came up with at the API level is really just a very simple, like, check if the feature's available. So the way we think about it is, like, you know, say your application is for taking selfies. If you want to take a picture, you simply, as an application developer, just say, if this particular device has portrait mode, I'd actually like to use it. Or if it has a bokeh mode, I'd actually like to use it. But your application is still fine, obviously, on devices that don't have this additional capability. So the way we pose the API is like is for those use cases where it's like, yeah, I want to take a portrait of someone. If portrait mode is available, I'd prefer to use it. If it's not available, my app's going to still function okay. So the API really is just like, check if it's available, and if it is, engage it. If not, I'm still going to be okay to continue on in my application and do what we need to do. So that lets us avoid device specific. Now, if the application is really like hinging on the on that particular extension being there, like the whole point of the application maybe is like a HDR or a night mode application, then they can also use that check to say, well, if it's not available, then I can fail or do some other thing.
Yeah, the part I'm still not understanding is this API, right? So if it was like a Treble API, I understand there's a header file somewhere, and like each, you know, each device, well, what do we call it, the basement, we'll implement that API. So that, you know, that if part of the Treble API said, here's the Camera API and it has these constants for, you know, bokeh mode and all this stuff, okay. But you said it was not Treble. So like there's this other API, right? So
correct.
Are you saying that on the S10 there's a shared library, but it's in a standard location and it's implementing some interface you've defined? So you just know you can DL open it and it's gonna have a certain signature and you can just call that method. So this is standardized across all devices. Is
exactly.
that how it works?
Exactly.
How come you chose to do that and not make it sort of part of Treble?
There's an element of innovation there. What's happened is we acknowledge that each Android dessert release has come out once a year. At the same time, each manufacturer might have some special hardware or some special set of capabilities that they're releasing far more frequently. And so what we needed was actually some mechanism where that functionality can reach developers as quickly as possible and not wait for the next year's dessert release. In addition, what we wanted was backwards compatibility. So let's say, you know, now a family of Samsung devices has this library on there and a new algorithm gets updated. This new algorithm then can be available on all those devices, even if they're not upgraded to the latest dessert release. So we wanted to decouple the updatability
part. But you said that the library isn't part of the app. It's on the device.
Correct. So let's say Samsung has, or any manufacturer has a new...
I was saying we need ugly mode. So when I take pictures of myself, the beauty's not going to work. So they come out with ugly mode, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So let's say they come out with ugly mode. In this case, let's say 2 years from now, ugly mode is like the next best thing.
Yep.
And so they say, cool, Camera X has been there since S10. All devices, Samsung pushes a vendor, their own library update, their algorithm library update on all their S10 and newer devices. And without a letter upgrade, then Camera X can just call ugly mode and provide.
So the idea is that the Treble image only gets updated on letter updates, and there's this other lighter weight mechanism for pushing libraries, not part of that. Okay.
But there's still a two-step mechanism where, okay, well, three steps. First, they have to invent the thing. Then they need to have a library for accessing that functionality on the devices where it exists. And then you need to update the Camera X library, and applications need to come. No, it's an extension. No. They still need to compile because this is a new mode.
It's a new mode.
Right. So they would need to go update to the latest extension, the latest Camera X version, to get that thing where basically under the covers you've said, okay, well, we've become aware of a new library that we need to go out and query.
Right. And that's certainly true. There are still a few steps involved. I think the biggest benefit is the reach.
Yep.
So where developers have said that, hey, you know, it's cool that a new dessert release comes out, but it's going to be the next few years before it actually becomes mainstream. And so in this way, this is our way to give developers access to whatever comes out as quickly as possible.
Right.
And as wide as possible.
Yeah, it's very Jetpack in its nature,
yes.
Right? Like, this is the whole part is that you can do that out of band and not just, you know, have them, well, yeah, that you have to go get the new library and compile against it. But if Samsung, for instance, released that capability for older devices, it would also work there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the developer APIs or the developer code doesn't change. See, they just have to take in a new version of the library, but it's still the same methodology. Does feature X, does a bokeh extension exist? If so, use it, but that's it.
Right. I mean, their code would have to change to incorporate this new mode.
Agreed.
Right?
Agreed.
But yeah, at least it's the same pattern for accessing this functionality. Yeah.
Okay. I understand. Cool.
So one of the use cases that Tor didn't ask about is sort of fundamental to the, you know, the draw the box around the face, which is saving the file, right? So I took the preview. Well, now what do I do with that thing? Because it kind of drops on the floor if you don't go beyond the preview. Can you talk about that? Like, I looked at some of the simple use cases where it's like, yeah, and I created a, you know, there's like a hard-coded string to a path name there.
Right, yeah. So we have an image capture API, image capture use case. And really, that's intended to just make the basic function of let's just take a picture easier for developers. So we have a couple of ways to interface with that. The simplest one is, you know, just give it a file location, and it's going to write a JPEG there. And you have a couple of callback handlers for success and error. We also have a version where you're able to get an in-buffer version, in-memory version of the buffer. And that might be useful, say, if you want to take a high-quality picture, but then transmit it somewhere, say.
Right, or even to display it, because, like, given a file name, well, now I need to, like, decode it. Well, it was already decoded. I'd like to use that thing, right?
Right, yeah. And so, yeah, basically being able to weave that in, into the applications, right?
Yeah. Okay.
You said JPEG. Do you have any opinions on JPEG versus WebP?
At the moment, I think I would say we encourage developers to use YUV as much as possible. So JPEG is more of a saving format. I think that's the primary format that the Camera 2 platform provides, which is what we're tying off of. But what we've found is that oftentimes some developers, if they want to add, say, effects on top, so say you take a picture, you want to add a bunny ear on top, in that regard, taking a YUV is a far better approach than JPEG, and that's something that we've found. We've been advising developers.
Okay. So YUV, is that an image format, or is that like a encoding? I was sort of thinking that that's the... it's not like an HSV, right? Where you have the hue, saturation, and value. Is this where you decompose into like different color channels? I'm sorry, like my ignorance here is totally showing through.
Yeah, it's like a luminance with and color channels, different formats for it. But it's, basically, it's essentially the non-compressed.
I see. So it's a way of getting out the image data where it's going to be easier to do certain kind of processing on it because you've sort of separated out the different attributes that might be relevant to doing image analysis.
Exactly.
I see.
So Tori was asking about WebP, and you immediately linked it to YUV. Is that because WebP is able to actually save in?
No. So I think from a image saving format, we're sticking to JPEG for the moment.
Okay. And that's primarily, I guess, because Camera 2 was doing it.
Camera 2.
Because I'm under the impression that WebP is in many ways better, although it requires Jelly Bean, 4.2.1, I think. So like that's why in the past people weren't using it. But I think if your main SDK version is, at least 17 at this point, I think WebP assets are quite a bit better.
They're ill. So
yeah.
Camera X is Lollipop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so JPEG right now, because Camera 2 supports it, and then going one layer deeper, it's because a lot of the JPEG can be done in hardware. So there's an advantage just using that. I think it's actually a nice example of where Camera X can help with newer formats is, today you could certainly get the YUV buffer and compress that into some other format. But if that's a really popular format that's being widely used, I can imagine adding an API into Camera X that says, just give me the WebP format, for example, and then we'll help implement whatever details there.
So I have a follow-up question about that. So you had said like the main priority for at least the API design was to focus on the important use cases and make those really simple. I can imagine some people saying, oh, I'd really love to add a new format to Camera X. I'll just release a library that layers on top of it and extends it in the following ways. If you are limiting the knobs and dials to prioritize simplicity, then how easy is it for someone to do that? Like, can they still get to all the functionality that they need to say, let's take that use case. Like, I want to add a new imaging format. Is that possible for them to do, or is that a bit opaque from the outside?
I think it's a bit depends on what the new traditional piece is.
Yeah.
It is our goal to make something that is extendable. So we do realize we do need to balance simplicity versus flexibility. I think the right way to do that is to make it at least simple to do the basic things so that it can be built upon with more complex flows. So, just get a YUV, but at least you can compress it to a different format, for example.
Overall, we're very much open to developers extending and building on top of Camera X. And if there are, specific use cases or specific scenarios where Camera X doesn't meet their needs, then we've been having discussions with a lot of developers to make sure that we are able to provide the hooks that they need. I think that to date, what you'll find is, at least the developers we've spoken to, is they're just so frustrated with the basics. And that they haven't had too much of a chance to kind of say, okay, how do I innovate? And so we want to take that away and give them that opportunity to actually innovate and hopefully innovate on top of Camera X.
Okay.
Speaking of API simplicity, have you started thinking about Kotlin access? Like a Kotlin extension library, or annotating your library with nullness annotations and things like that?
Yeah, I think we definitely, we work with Kotlin. Basically, we're trying to make an API that works nicely with Kotlin applications. For the time being, we're going to remain a Java API, but we do want to put in as many of the niceties that make it appear nicely when working with Kotlin, things like not null and, you know, the set and get being able to use, like, in a more Kotlin fashion. Yeah.
I want to go back to the question that I tried to ask a long time ago. But I don't think we had enough context, which is, so workarounds. So the library internally will say, oh, we know that this thing doesn't work here, so we're gonna do that. I guess a couple of questions. One is, do you have examples of places where you've done this or specific features that you have made work? And the other is, like, how do you do it when a camera just doesn't expose or a piece of hardware doesn't expose the correct functionality for you to do it? Like, is it possible for you to do computational stuff on the CPU to work around that? And are there examples of that as well?
Yeah, let me take the first one. So the question is around, you know, how do we actually do the device-specific workarounds? I think so far we're pleasantly surprised, and we're hoping the streak continues, is that we haven't had to do really, like, if device one, do something, if device two, okay, do something else.
Yeah.
What we've found is it's been more around the camera to API levels. So if it's a legacy level camera to API versus a limited level or a full level.
Sorry, can you explain those?
So camera two defines a set of device capabilities. Mm-hmm. That's part of the camera characteristics that's provided to the developer. This is called the info-supported hardware level. And in there, they list four categories: legacy, limited, full, and level three. I didn't call
obviously,
those things.
Duh.
It was so much room for improvement in APIs here. This is awesome. Okay. And it's three, so it was like a zero-based array as well. It wasn't four because you listed four, but it was called three. Okay. All right. Keep
going. Now we know why they chose to call it camera X, not camera three. Like, they didn't want to sort of continue the lineage of expectation.
Right, right. We wanted to move to alphabets. So the legacy level indicates that it is underneath a HAL 1 device or a device that is not native to HAL 3. So also more context here is when we say camera 2, the underlying assumption is that a device has a HAL 3 version, which is the underlying HAL is the latest version 3.
Okay.
And then when we say the camera 1 API, the assumption is the underlying HAL version is HAL version 1.
Yep.
Again, I don't know where 2 disappeared.
Okay. Probably the same place that 3 came from for the fourth thing. All right.
And so, the legacy level indicates that this device is, even though you're making a camera 2 API call, you're going through some translation layer and you're actually talking to a older HAL 1 implementation.
Yeah.
And so even though the API is complex, you're not expected to get as many knobs, if you will, in this HAL 1 implementation. And if it's a limited, full, or level 3, you're supposed to get more and more capabilities. Yep. So for example, level 3 adds in YUV reprocessing.
Yep.
For example. So what we've done is really, when we started looking at devices, especially some of the devices from 2014, 15, 16, several of these are marked as camera 2 legacy devices. And what we found is they behave in interesting ways. one example was, like, one of the devices, the image is just dark, and another example is we can never get a specific aspect ratio or a specific resolution out.
Mm-hmm. I think the dark images, that's lens cap mode, isn't it?
I've had that.
So there's James can have a few more examples here, but there are several examples like these where, a developer would have to do a lot of, you know, traditionally, if device A,
yeah,
do something, if device B, do something. But what when we started really looking at this at an aggregate level, we actually found the same issues persisted across devices. And that's when we realized, aha, actually, maybe it's this whole legacy layer that needs a fix. It's not just this one device.
You built up so much suspense. How did you fix this problem? I mean, if it's not exposed, how do you get to it?
I think that's one of the things we spent basically at least March and April, just a lot of the team just focused on getting some of the basics working with a legacy layer.
Yeah.
So it really just was a lot of like understanding what the problem is and just going through and figuring it out. I think one of the benefits that we have is we basically sit beside the Android camera platform team who had built the framework there.
Yeah.
And that really helped us a lot to get insight into what was going on and help our debug and triage. So at the end of the day, we're able to make something that understands what's going on internally, so we're doing the right thing.
Is that an awkward conversation around the water cooler where you're disintermediating their API?
I don't think so. The way I think of it is, camera 2 is not going away. It's really the full featured camera API that lets you get at all the bells and whistles. If a developer is really making a truly almost like trying to make a DSLR out of an Android device, that's really the right API where they will get the features that they need. But I think there's also an understanding that a lot of applications have simple uses, at some of the expense of balancing out flexibility for simplicity, then we can make those trade-offs at the library layer. So I think the two API levels kind of work together nicely.
Well, but I thought that what you added was this ability to have compatibility, right, with a bunch of devices that you've tested, whereas an app developer choosing to dip into Camera 2 is going to have to do all that work themselves, right? What are the use cases that Camera 2 has that Camera X is not suited for?
I think of it as a fully manual camera. So if you do look at all the different things that you can set in Camera 2, there's quite a few other manual settings you can do.
That you can't do with Camera X?
Yeah, they're not yet. So we'll certainly support, like, if there's a lot of developer need for some of these settings, and we can certainly add that in. I think the other area that we look at where Camera 2 is great are doing things like slow-mo or special effects, where the application is really driving the camera system in some more sophisticated, really particular way, then that's much more suited for
Camera 2. These sounds like things that developers might request, right? So you shipped preview at Google I.O., is that correct?
We shipped alpha, yes, at Google.
Alpha, okay. So what's the feedback been so far? Are developers coming up with use cases that you don't support yet and that you're considering? Or is it sort of like, hey, it works, just fix this one bug and we're good?
I mean, so far, we've been blessed that it's really been more of help us just fix these bugs and overall the API lets us do what we want. I wanna give some context there, is that we've been working with a lot of developers since last year, almost like since last I.O. I met several developers at I.O. last year where we told them early on that what we're looking to do, and they started giving us feedback. We worked with GDEs as well, the Google developer experts. Last summer, we conducted a lot of developer interviews to really understand their pain points and kind of empathize with the problems that they're facing. And since then, those same set of developers, and we also met several developers in China in GDD last year as well, we've been piloting this API. They've given us feedback on it. We've shared early versions of the API. They've tried it in their applications. And so what we've ended up with is really Camera X is an API where developers have had a lot of say in the design phase, the building phase. You know, we would send out just the API documentation. There's no line of code written, but here's the doc. Give us feedback on how we've implemented this API.
Yep.
And that has really helped ensure that we build a robust enough API where developers feel that it's something that's suitable, that works for them. And to your question more around Camera 2 as well, like, we look at both Camera 2 and Camera X as part of the overall platform. And since I'm the... I'm responsible for both Camera 2 and Camera X. It kind of, we balance out what are some of the things where, if it's more structural, if you will, so say there's a brand new standard in particular, then we would put that in Camera 2 so that it's available across the board. And then Camera X is a layer on top that provides more the ease of use and a friendlier developer experience.
If I can go back to what I was trying to ask before, it feels like we built up all the suspense, but we didn't quite get to the release, which is, okay, so let's take one of those examples you called out, like dark images. You get legacy mode, there's nothing you can do about it, but you've figured out how. So how does that work? Like, if all you have is limited functionality because it's going through camera one, how do you actually fix the problems?
Right, so there's some kind of other like interesting examples of what's worked. For legacy layers, one of the problems was actually you need to be very picky about certain resolutions, because it turns out if you're not, you either don't get what you expected, or there can actually be a lifecycle problem on the restart. So sometimes, oftentimes you'll be like, my app works okay, except on this one device, after I close my app, I need to swipe it dead before I reopen.
I see.
But by understanding, it turns out that that's because there's certain configuration limitations that you have to take into account that work better with the lifecycle.
Yeah.
And so in those particular cases, what we do have to do is output a different resolution.
Yep.
But it gives at least at the application layer, you know that it's going to work. You just need to work around the resolution for now. And then one thing we'd actually like to do even though we give out a different resolution, then we can still give options. Maybe we have give the crop range that they want, or even do some scaling perhaps as optional. So that's kind of one example.
Okay. Yeah.
Another example is what we found is when to actually close the camera. So if you have a camera session that started, traditionally you could say just restart another camera session, and it's supposed to close the camera and take care of the timing. But what we found is it doesn't always work with the life cycles. And so by forcing close the camera at specific, in a specific sequence, makes a big difference on some of these legacy devices.
Yeah, actually, I think one really interesting example of that was, ideally, there does exist a test layer that enforces some uniformity on the camera at the lower level. But even with the best testing, some things are just either not testable or even not feasible. So a great example related to closing also is some devices can support two cameras being open at once. Some devices can support one. So if you think back, maybe there was only used to be a back camera and then there was a front camera. And it's fine if a device can only have one camera open at a time. And it's extra if some devices you can actually open both. That's kind of cool. Where this becomes interesting in practice is, let's say your application is switching from the back camera to the front camera. If you happen to be on a device that lets both cameras be open at the same time, you can be a bit more lax. You can be shutting down one camera, and while that camera's coming down, you can open up the second camera, right? And so those two can kind of be open for that small amount of overlap. Your application works fine. You think you're done, and you sort of, that's that. But then someone tries that on an older device that only has one. It turns out you actually need to wait for the back camera to fully shut down before you can bring up the front camera. But neither of those sort of behaviors is necessarily incorrect. It's not necessarily incorrect that a device can only have one, nor is it incorrect that a device could have two. And so that's something that we can work around by understanding at the high level, actually the developer just wants to switch from this camera to that camera. We can go through, maybe understand the device level. If it's a more advanced one, we can maybe do a bit of a quicker switch, or we can do the safer thing and make sure one's brought down completely before the other one is brought up.
Right. And then I guess part of this problem is there, as you said, it's not necessarily incorrect, which means there's no API for this to find out that you need to be doing this. You just need to play around with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's sort of like what we're trying to do within the CameraX layer. And that's one of the benefits, I think, that we get from creating a bit of a higher level abstraction where we get more at developer intent.
Yep. Let's say my camera app was trying to be clever and sort of instead of a camera switching button, it shows the other camera as a little thumbnail and I click on it to switch. Right, and let's say that I'm testing my app and it works fine because the camera I'm testing with has that feature. How would I construct a test where I can sort of mock the different camera behaviors? Like, do you provide a CameraX testing library, or what are the best practices for sort of running through a bunch of Espresso UI tests in my app and having and testing different camera behaviors?
So for testing, we do have actually inside our inside the library in the code, we do have like the integration test apps, and we do have examples of using Espresso and UI Automator with the camera. With that specific example of if the app is really built around having one camera shown while the other one's in preview.
Well, when I'm more meant with that, I assume that Espresso test will just run the camera as it is on that device or emulator. But if I want to have a test and I want to run it 10 times with like, you know, if I want to try all the common camera behaviors, I assume you know what those camera behaviors are. You know, like I don't want all possible permutations of all possible feature flags, right? But I would like to be able to maybe run my test suite through 10 different cameras, if camera is a really essential part of my app. Let's say it's a banking app again. So I want to run through all the scenarios of scanning and a check across a bunch of different camera capabilities. Is there some good way of doing that, or do I need to do my own sort of mocking?
Oh, do you mean like running across different devices or different?
I think he's asking about a couple things. One is cross-device, and I wanted to ask about the lab after we're done. But I think the other is there a framework for actually testing camera X? And what I'm hearing is there's not a testing framework. You just use a normal test framework that we have.
Which means I have to have all those different camera cameras, and I have to know which cameras have different limitations, so I know what to buy.
No, actually, so I think there's a bit of a let me add some more context before we answer that question. So, with Camera X, we as Google have taken on a huge testing burden away from the developers. So here's what I mean. When I met several developers in GDD in China last year, what we were pretty shocked to learn is that several developers had hundreds of like a large room with hundreds of devices and manual testers just testing basic things like exactly what you're saying, which is they open up the camera app in a certain order and then they switch and do certain things or and what have you. And you know, developers should
slowly their soul dies. Yes.
They shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's really the bottom line. Like, it is not something that developers should have to do, regardless of their size or scale. And it's really challenging for new and coming developers as well. And so what we decided was, let's invest in an automated camera test lab that's using the CameraX library. And it's testing functionality that developers care about. Things like just simply taking a picture or getting the preview up or doing a rotation into landscape and portrait, cropping, etc. And that's what we've ended up doing. So we currently have a device lab here in Mountain View, and that device lab has a large number of devices in there. And these devices span all the way to 2014 and all the way to some of the newer devices across all the various OS levels. And it's running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And that's making sure that these APIs work. That when I say, hey, camera, phone, whatever, please take a night mode picture, it will do that correctly, right?
Right. So right now it's testing the core APIs not necessarily the extensions at the moment, but it's what it's doing is making sure that, yes, that when you call this API,
right.
I would say it's not, I'd say it's testing more than the API, because traditionally when we do like CTS tests or VTS tests with Treble, oftentimes we do it either on an emulator or on a device that's on a rack that has the camera is facing down. It's a black picture. You have no idea. The focus is not there. In this case, we control the lighting in the box. We control the subject or the object of the picture that it's being taken. So it's a lot more, it provides a lot more confidence to the developer that when you use these APIs, it's actually going to work across all these set of devices. And then when you take it into to your UI question, if you will, I think perhaps another way to look at it is we don't know how developers want to satisfy their use cases. So if a banking app, for example, has a use case of like, here's my flow and I need to check through that UI, we don't have that a UI framework, if you will, to test through with CameraX. But that's definitely some good feedback that we can figure out how do we
I was thinking of the case that Chet mentioned, right, where there was like 50 lines of scaling code Let's say that I'm lucky that in my case, it's a one-to-one scale, so my code just works. But I just want to make sure that if you had responded to my call with a different resolution and the scaling factor was not 100% but 400%, I want to make sure that works too. And so I'm trying to figure out how do I wire up my code so I can run the test twice, right? Getting different results from the camera each time. And it seems like maybe today I have to mock different responses from the camera. So whereas I trust that whatever the camera is doing is correct. That's what your test lab is ensuring. But like in my app, I want to make sure that my code is correct given different responses from the camera library.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm cool. Hearing that. That was my first feature request of the day, Silence. Camera X dash testing.
And to be clear too, the test lab, that is an internal thing in which you verify that the library functionality is working correctly.
Yeah. We verify the library functionality on a specific set of production devices. So what we did is we went to several e-commerce websites and ended up buying a bunch of phones from production and then stuck them in the lab.
So now you're learning things about like the uptimes and hardware durability of these cameras, I guess. You know, how many pictures can it take?
Exactly.
Like those IKEA chairs that they have this like a robot that just pushes the button over and over to like test how many sits you can have on a chair. You know, we'll know how many times you can press the camera button, I guess, on each different device.
Oh yeah, yeah. Stress testing is always pretty interesting. Like can your application stack endure, 10,000?
Yeah.
Photos.
I know that in Android, we had another episode a while back with Romain about the color calibration capabilities, on, was it Android P? I think P, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I'm wondering if, since you're taking pictures with these cameras in a controlled lighting environment, if you could sort of do your own calibration. And could the Camera X library actually help do color correction? So if some camera lens isn't entirely, neutral. Let's say someone put like a yellow tint on it. Could you do correction to make the pictures come out better?
So there's a lot we can do. I think
what's the expectation actually? I don't know if app developers want that or not.
Right. So I think what you are alluding to is something that we are actually investigating currently. Is how do we standardize kind of image quality testing at scale? What is image quality? Image quality itself, as we're learning, has many, many attributes.
Well, there was a lot of drama, right? When we shipped a device a couple of years ago where we believed the colors were correct. And a lot of users were like, I want that boosted saturation that I'm used to from my other device. Right. And that was kind of controversial. People actually wanted something better than real life. Better, if better means more saturated, that is.
Right. And that's where, there's a metric of subjectivity and then there's a metric of objectivity. And what we certainly can account for subjectivity within these tests, but what we're looking to do is actually see how can we measure image quality in an objective sense, characterize these set of devices from across all OS layers, and then start figuring out what should be our guidance, both to developers, to manufacturers, and internally, frankly, to see where do we go next with image quality. But that's what you're proposing is not too far-fetched, but it's something that we're looking at.
But actually, it's interesting. The dark images that we briefly mentioned before is actually something has to do with image quality, but it turns out that's just that particular device having kind of odd default camera 2 settings. So it was kind of odd, like, hey, this one device pictures or the viewfinder appears dimmer. And I'm like, well, that's kind of odd because we're basically using automatic settings, and presumably the metering would be okay, and the onboard camera app looks fine. But it turns out that the default camera 2 setting was actually clamping the exposure range to be very specific to maintain frame rate. Say, we're able to do this because we have we're able to test a wide number of devices. And so I think at the Camera X layer, then we can say, well, what do we want to decide on the API as what the developer expectation is? If the feedback is generally developers would expect that we have reasonable AGC at the expense of frame rate, then we can go back, go through all the devices and say, okay, some have kind of quote non-standard default settings, and we can set those defaults to be something that's more developer friendly, and without developers having to figure that out on their own.
And to add to the example there for say the phone that was outputting dark images, what we've also done is work with very closely with some of the manufacturers on some of these older devices, where we actually share with them the problems that we've uncovered and then get their help. There might some manufacturers have said, oh yeah, there's this one flag. If you set it this way, then it just works. so it's actually closing the loop, if you will, is, you know, closing the loop all the way from the developer, on the framework and the manufacturer. And that's something that we've done so far, across a wide number of devices.
All right. So, wrapping up, do you have any sort of recommendations for, you're raising your hand.
Yeah, I had one question. I was going to return to the first question that I had in the podcast, which is, what state is it in now? So it came out alpha at I.O. And I guess the question in my mind with any alpha is, does this represent your best guess as to what the API should be? Or do you know that it is either a subset of what will eventually be there, you know, given feedback and other things you have in mind? Or do you actually see it morphing over time because, you know, there were a lot of things in motion?
I think of this as a fairly accurate sketch of the direction that we're taking with the API.
Yep.
Understanding, like, yeah, we do think about things like life cycles, the way we think about things of use cases and the specific APIs that hang off use cases, and what that means to how applications should be structured. And so I do think a lot of that overall structure is kind of the direction that we're taking. And we know that we have to add a lot of specific APIs. But as long as those things can be added kind of within this overall structure, then that'll kind of be our direction.
Okay. And are you looking for feedback as well? Like Vineet was saying, you actually had substantial feedback during development already, but is there an obvious place, like if people start using this and they have feature suggestions?
Absolutely. Well, and we continue to get feedback, and we welcome feedback.
Through what channel?
So we have a Camera X tag on Stack Overflow.
Okay.
And then we also have a CameraX developers Google group that folks can join. It's an open discussion where you'll see what all the questions come in. So those two are the best channels that are regularly monitored.
We can link those in the show notes as well. Excellent. So now back to your wrap up.
Yeah, so I was going to say, so wrapping up, where's the state of the library right now? Just kidding. any sort of parting thoughts, anything you want, any call to action for developers, any kind of thing you want to recommend?
I think certainly download it and give it a try. And please reach out. Feedback right now is really valuable to us to help us steer things in the right direction. We want to know that it looks like it's going to work well in your application and you don't see any roadblocks. And maybe there's a few APIs that we can add, but we're trying to get confidence that this is something that's going to really help developers.
Do you feel that you have, just to ask another question, do you feel that you have the reach, the spread of devices and an idea of what's going on there already? Or are you also looking for, well, now that everybody can access the library, they can test it in geos that we're not familiar with or on devices that we haven't thought of?
We're also very open to hearing about device-specific issues.
Yep.
Now, obviously, there's quite a lot of different types of Android devices out there. We'll need to prioritize and understand, you know, where we start with tackling this over time.
Yep.
But I think the more representation we get from what's happening on applications and on different devices especially, it will help us figure out what the right thing to do is.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm super excited actually by the direction, you know, with the direction that CameraX is taking and the feedback that we've gotten so far and we continue to get. And I think just trying out the library and, you know, whether it's a written device that we haven't seen before or whether that's a device that we've already tried, just getting some level of feedback would be great. And then we can roll it in. And I really do hope and our sincere desire is that camera development is just as easy as adding just a line.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.